heard of this? It's called iDosing. And websites are luring kids with free downloads of so-called digital drugs, which are audio files designed to induce drug-like effects.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
We're going to stay here all night if we have to, so let's get started.
Can I go when this starts to suck?
If I knew what I know now then, way back when we first met, I'd point to the sunset and say I drew that for you. Every now and then you can catch it wrinkling in the rain. See, I can talk a good game from the stage, but if you want to gauge a romantic thing said while we're messing up the bed, the best I can give you is, oh my God, we're totally humping. Regardless, there's something beautiful about stating the obvious. All of us do it in those moments when we can't believe it, we have to say it. It's like pinching yourself to make sure you're awake. Take, for example, something as simple as touching someone. We so often say, you're so soft. And the person that touched them last may have said it for the 28th time, but today I'm number 29. And I'm not saying it for her benefit, I'm saying it for mine. Because there's almost 7 billion people in a world, half of which are men, and the number of them is 3.5 billion. Pretty fucking cool that I was number 29. And once upon a time, I was first in line for a girl with freckles and strawberry blonde hair. We loved like an electric chair hooked up to a nuclear power plant and plugged into the sun, and everything we did had never been done. I woke up with a smile the next morning that told the world, I'm number one. I think of her more often than sometimes. And if she ever hears this, I want her to know that our first kiss tasted like pepper. I met her on June 27th. That year, it was Yellowknife's first day of continual light. Despite the sun not setting that night, we each went home alone. Even though our parents told us to be home before dark, we could have stayed out for weeks. Could have watched the way the sun leaks like liquid over the horizon, casting shadows on all the right places of a bargain bin where love was 75% off and we're collectively 25 cents away from forever. There are times in the north when the sun never sets. And it gets confusing when we ask ourselves questions like, is it too late? Or too early? More often than sometimes, we didn't care. We loved like two games of solitaire waiting to be played by one another. Her mother once asked me, do you love her? And I told her if there were 1 million teachers breathing down my neck telling me that the answer is no, I would say yes. I guess that was enough for her. Because that girl's father palmed me a condom and wished me a happy birthday. Even now, there's no way to tell. Was that awkward or creepy? We loved like two hitmen hell-bent on assassinating regret. Her orgasm, a wet gremlin, multiplying itself into another. Her younger brother knocked on the door asking, what are you guys doing in there? And somewhere amid the awesome and the amazing, we replied in unison, studying. And technically we were. I wrote notes on her skin in flesh-toned permanent ink that would sink and set inside as I tried to underline the important parts of her. Belly button, birthmark, collarbone. Wrote notes explaining that hers felt like silk stretched over stone. I said, you're so soft. She smiled and said, duh. Followed by my belly button is not an erogenous zone. And I said, I hate that word. She said, which one? And I said, erogenous. I told her there's beauty in the obvious. And your belly button, that's where you started. That's where cells divided and grew into you. So let me do what students do best. You can test me later. Right now, let me study. She smiled and said, you're lucky. This is a take-home test, boy. I think of the beauty in the obvious, the way it forces us to admit how it exists, the way it insists on being pointed out like a bloody nose, or how every time it snows, there's always someone around to say, it's snowing. But the obvious isn't showing off. It's simply reminding us that time passes, and somewhere along the way, we must grow up, not perfect, but up and out. It teaches us something about time. That we're all ticking and talking, walking the fine line between days and weeks. As if each second speaks of years and each month has ears, listening to forever but never hearing anything beyond centuries swallowed up by millenniums. As if time was calculating the sums needed to fill the empty belly of eternity, we so seldom understand each other. But if understanding is neither here nor there and the universe is infinite, understand no matter where we go, we will always be smack dab in the middle of nowhere. All we can do is share some piece of ourselves and hope that it's remembered. Hope that we meant something to someone. My chest is a cannon that I have used to take aim and shoot my heart upon this world. I love the way an uncurled fist becomes a hand again. Because when I take notes, I need it to underline the important parts of you. Happy. Sad. Lovely. Battle cry ballistic like a disaster in lipstick, earthquaking, taking out the monuments over my hollow yesterdays will always have the obvious. It reminds us who and where we are. It lives like a heart shaped like a jar that we hand to others and ask, can you open this for me? We always get the same answer. Not without breaking it. More often than sometimes. I say go for it.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
Good evening. This is Ed Murrow. Listen, if you will, to the voice of a Polish lady who now lives in Germany. We can't tell you her name, because if we did, innocent people might die.
I had to leave Poland because my uncle, who is a priest, was active against the communists. My husband was a policeman, and he had to escape because he helped anti-communist agents. My husband and I have been in this camp for 4 years. Our little boy, who is 2.5 years old, was born here in the camp. It is the dream of most people back there to get away to freedom. When people dare to talk to each other, back there, they say, if we could just get across the green border, then everything would be all right.
CBS Radio brings you the second in its series of feature project productions. 4 weeks ago, you heard Bomb Target USA, a tape-recorded study of this continent's military and civilian defense. Tonight, with Edward R. Murrow as narrator, we bring you The Green Border, the first report on the men and women who have escaped from behind the Iron Curtain, recorded in their own words, their own voices. Who are these refugees? What kind of people are they? What happens in the refugee camps? What is the future of the men and women who have fled from communist tyranny? Here now, The Green Border, and Edward R. Murrow.
Let it be known at the outset that we do not know the ultimate answers to the questions which will be raised during this next hour. We know only that our reporters have been living with the story of these escapees from behind the Iron Curtain, and that they are agreed that this story cannot be told by one voice or by one writer. This is a story that can best be told only by the people themselves. People in suspension. People who have thrown away their past and who now grope toward an uncertain future. It is a serious decision for a man to make, to give up his home, his work, everything which bears his imprint. Why do they do it? We asked Egon Franta to give us his story. He escaped from Czechoslovakia. He'll tell you how later. Egon Franta is 39 years old. He's a large-boned, strongly built man, about 6 feet tall. He is dark-complexioned, but not dark enough to cover the perpetual circle of shadows under his eyes. But the eyes smile when he talks with you, and he has learned how to keep his emotions under control now. It isn't always easy. Egon Franta, why did you leave your home country?
In February 48, the communists took over in Czechoslovakia. I was, at that time, employee in the Ministry for Social Welfare. Shortly after the communist putsch, all employees of the ministry were asked to join the Communist Party, and most of them did so. In my department, only I and another colleague of out of 20 employees refused. Our reasons were mainly our moral beliefs and religious feeling. A good friend of mine, who was a member of the party, so has always been an anti-communist, informed me that the local organization of the party in the place I lived has received an order from the State Security Service to watch me closely and to investigate my activities in a confessional youth organization.
A clear choice. his religious beliefs, or membership in the Communist Party. And without membership in the party, investigation by the State Security Service. What about the others? Why do some of the others make their way through the curtain? Meyer Rapolis, a laborer, tells us his story. Tells it as he stares hard at the ground.
I left Romania because the communists, they didn't like me. In the wartime, I worked with the Germans in Romania, and my father too. And then after the war, the communists, they took my father to Siberia. They came to take me away. They couldn't find me, so they took my wife. I was afraid of the communists, and I couldn't live there.
They came to take me away. They couldn't find me, so they took my wife.
John Kerry poses as a masseuse to get a few minutes with Putin. Parents reminisce to their children about the dating algorithm that brought them together. And a lowly mortal opens a portal to hell. Personally dictated into the ear of this announcer by the Lord Jesus Christ himself, this is The Onion Week in Review. Russian President Vladimir Putin told reporters in a press conference Wednesday that he was not ruling out a military response to continued international diplomacy, saying that in the face of sanctions and phone calls with foreign dignitaries, he reserved the right to deploy troops and incite violent confrontations throughout Eastern Europe. A defiant Putin told Western leaders that he would not back down from their obvious efforts to salvage international relations. Americans across the nation made their voices heard this week as they demanded more mind-blowing guitar solos, calling for the solos to be, quote, face-meltingly cool and go on for well over 10 minutes. Americans stressed that all guitar solos from now on should be equally as kick-ass as those in Van Halen's Hot for Teacher and AC/DC's Thunderstruck, or even better.
It should start out really slow, you know, and then get faster and faster until they're all the way up at the top of the guitar neck and bending the notes like crazy, so it's like, and then there's all this awesome pyrotechnic stuff going off in the background. They should all be like that.
A study released by Princeton University Tuesday found that slapping everyone in a grocery store and exposing yourself in the produce section is still a behavior frowned upon by society. Researchers behind the report noted all of the experiment's numerous trials resulted in similarly negative responses, regardless of whether test subjects rubbed cold cuts on their naked bodies, charged at customers like a rhino while wearing a banana tape to their foreheads, or loudly sang several verses of Yankee Doodle directly at a cashier. And in this week's local news, a report noted that on its surface, Glenbrook, Ohio is a small town like any other, a peaceful, all-American town. And yet, the report's authors added, if you only look closer, what you find may surprise you. In other news, Chinese factory workers fear they may never be replaced with machines. The mischievous Koch brothers trick a beautiful woman into thinking there's only one of them, and a man is just having one of those decades where he doesn't feel like doing anything. This concludes part 538,000 in a 2-million-part series cataloging the course of human existence.
Darkness, my old friend, I've come to talk with you again, because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping, and the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound. Silence.
And it's General Keith Alexander's last day as director of the U.S. National Security Agency. After 8 years at the helm of the U.S. Intelligence Service, the 61-year-old is retiring. Since June last year, he's been tasked with dodging accusations and providing explanations for the NSA's secret surveillance program. The agency's practices became public when government contractor Edward Snowden leaked thousands of classified documents about the program to the media. RT Zamira David looks at how the leaks became the precursor to the end of General Alexander's career.
Even though today officially marks the end of his tenure as director of the National Security Agency, June 5th, 2013 is likely the date Keith Alexander will never forget. That's the day Alexander would learn about Edward Snowden, a computer specialist working as an NSA government contractor. This is the man who would unleash thousands of classified documents detailing the extent of America's global surveillance.
In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, neath the halo of a street lamp, I turned my collar to the cold and damp. When my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a neon light that split the night and touched the sound of silence.
Barack Obama is trying to clean up spying by Americans on Americans. The president announced today he wants to restrict what data the NSA collects. Our senior Washington correspondent, Neil McDonald, looks at the state of snooping.
I think that
there is no question. Had it not been for Edward Snowden's leaks about the extent of electronic eavesdropping here and abroad, nothing would be changing. President Obama admitted as much today.
I recognize that because of these revelations, that there's a process that's taking place where we have to win back the trust, not just of governments, but more importantly of ordinary citizens.
It's been nearly a year since Snowden went public, making headlines worldwide. Since then, at least one federal judge here has declared the massive collection of America's phone records to be unconstitutional. Polls suggest most Americans disapprove of the program. And the president, while defending his spies, sympathizes.
And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. People talking without speaking. People hearing without listening. People writing songs that voices never share. No one dared disturb the sound of silence.
I think the fears about our privacy in this age of the internet and big data are justified.
So Obama now wants legal changes. Phone companies, not the National Security Agency, would store communications records. And a judge would have to authorize each and every access to them by intelligence agencies. But everyone, Obama, his officials, his spy masters, and politicians from both parties, say Edward Snowden is nonetheless a traitor who should be brought back from his Russian asylum in chains. Polls suggest most Americans agree. To some, though, he's a patriot and a hero. Norman Solomon, who has organized pro-Snowden petitions, says Americans are constantly told, if you see something, say something.
Edward Snowden saw something, and he said something.
This former FBI whistleblower says that to charge Snowden with espionage, as the U.S. government has done, is lunacy.
Many people have said, great that we got this information, but the truth teller is a traitor. Kill the messenger. This doesn't make sense.
Canada, incidentally, has for years been running exactly the same sort of secret surveillance program that President Obama now wants to put an end to here. We know about the Canadian program courtesy of Edward Snowden, Peter. The difference is voters here made their disapproval clear and their government listened to them.
Fools, said I, you do not know. Silence like a cancer grows. Hear my words that I might teach you. Take my arms that I might reach you. But my words like silent raindrops fell and echoed in the wells of silence.
There's been a lot of criticism of his policy regarding drones and the NSA surveillance. And the NSA, it has argued that this kind of intelligence gathering is critical to try to protect the American homeland.
That has been extremely liberalized and I think abused by our own intelligence agencies. As a matter of fact, you know, I have felt that my own communications were probably monitored. And when I want to communicate with a foreign leader privately, I type or write the letter myself, put it in the post office and mail it.
Old-fashioned snail mail.
Yeah, because I believe if I send an email, it will be monitored.
And the people bowed and prayed to the neon god they made. And the sign flashed its warning in the words that it was forming. And the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls and tenement halls, and whispered in the sound of silence.
All right, guys, we need new video ideas. What do you got?
I was thinking we could do a Bitcoin sketch.
Oh, yeah. Bitcoin is funny right now, but we'd have to move fast. Trap, start writing.
Wait, Sam. You know, I'm not sure it's the right moment for us to invest time in Bitcoin.
But look at Twitter, right? People are spending almost no time on Bitcoin jokes, and they're getting huge laughter returns.
Maybe in early 2013 it would have made sense to do a Bitcoin sketch, but now it's not worth it.
I'm with Trap here. I mean, in 5 years we're going to be getting just as many jokes from Bitcoin as we do from the government. Or perhaps Dogecoin.
Oh, you, Merv. I'm being serious here.
I'm being serious, too. Dogecoin's gonna be just as funny as Bitcoin, maybe even funnier.
Merv, shut up. Look, I'm having second thoughts. Trap, let's put a hold on the Bitcoin sketch.
I just think it's way too volatile. Look at this chart that I made. 2 months ago, everyone was trading knee slappers about Bitcoin. Cut to 1 month ago, nothing.
Trap could be right, though. I mean, look at how funny it is at its peak.
But after Mt. Gox happened, it got so unfunny, it actually made people sad.
That's why we get cheap laughs now, so the humor develops over time.
Wait, how do you think comedy works?
Imagine if we had written an Apple sketch in the 80s.
Okay, let's write this Bitcoin sketch.
I actually wrote a Bitcoin sketch last year.
Really?
Well, 0.8251 of a sketch, but...
How funny is it?
Honestly, I have no idea. I haven't checked on it in a while, and I forgot about it until this conversation.
Might be worth taking a look.
Yeah.
Oh, shit! Somebody stole it.
Trap, stop writing.
I can't believe I lost all that funny.
Sorry, bro.
At least I still have all these Dogecoin sketches.
Shut up. Wait, guys, there's an article here about how the creator of Bitcoin got chased by paparazzi.
It's funny again.
Start writing!
Maybe I was wrong.
Wait, I'm just reading a little further and I realized that this isn't funny at all. Sorry, Trap. That is a pass on the Bitcoin sketch.
No, Sam, you have to let me do this. It's gonna be the next big thing!
You're done here. Get out!
I'll write it on my own.
You're done!
And you'll remember this in the future, when I'm rolling and funny,
when I'm ROTFL!
Oh, let's do the sketch! Let's not do the sketch!
That's
the sketch
a wrap!
Back and forth! Jerk me around!
Oh, true!
Fuck you, Sam!
So, who else has ideas?
8-part Dogecoin web series.
On the small Indonesian island of Bali, a big deal is going down, as a villa has been sold in what's thought to be the largest Bitcoin transaction to date. The 2-bedroom, 2-bathroom property, complete with private pool, was bought by an anonymous buyer in Texas with less than 1,000 Bitcoin, which is the equivalent to roughly $600,000.
I can't tell you the exact amount, but it's just short of 1,000 Bitcoins, which, depending on the exchange rate, translates into about $600,000.
Despite the digital currency not being regulated or accepted as legal tender, the deal was sealed in late February through BitPremier, which is an exclusive Bitcoin trading website for luxury goods.
We've been referred to it by a family member who's been dealing with Bitcoins for the last 2 to 3 years. So we thought we'd give it a try and see what happens. And it worked out to be pretty good for us. And, you know, I know that it is not a legal currency. I don't really know if it ever will be, but I think the thing that has to happen right now is that the various governments, including the government of Indonesia, put the regulations in place and decide how they want to deal with this currency or this phenomenon.
The Indonesian central bank said the villa sale did not violate its law as it was done in US dollars.
I heard that black and Hispanic consumers were considered the easiest target markets on it seems to damage and use genes.
I heard that Chris Columbus discovered nothing but natives living here. He killed the man we senselessly celebrated our Thanksgiving
here. I heard that yes, clothing used to be a symbolic sign for homosexuals to identify like kind.
I heard that kids are only most likely to read cigarette ads placed conveniently low enough for them to see.
This is the marketplace, hucksters, monopolies, schools of charts, diagrams, programs, microchips. This is
the marketplace, advertising, sleight of hand, other corners of the public as applying what the times
this
demand.
This is the marketplace, piggy banks, open hand, give me some, killer man, business mode, billboard. This
is the marketplace from Field of Dreams, growing goodness, it would seem a sword, strictly bored about it, control your mind.
I saw an anorexic woman taking a place of a cellulite reality on every magazine cover, actually.
I saw photos of
the food you eat now, yo, it's made for props.
I know that often lives we're living don't reflect the life we're giving. All the difference in the self and what we all consider well.
I know the world don't move to the beat of one drum, cause the heart costs money, but my hands are numb.
I know that we are taught to follow, but not taught to follow through. It's hopeless if you're looking down on leaders, cause it's up to you.
This is the marketplace, hucksters, monopolies, school to talk, diagrams, programs, microchips.
And I walked right up to the owner, slammed my fist on the desk, and said, "I'm your man."
This is William Chambers. Now a retired insurance salesman, Chambers is just one of over 95% of grandfathers who, according to a new report from the Center of Business Intelligence, secured their first and only job by walking right up to the owner of a business and asking for a position right then and there.
So I said, "Mr. Carmichael, I know I don't have some fancy degree from Harvard, but I am a reliable man, and I ain't scared of hard work." He stood right up. He shook my hand and said, "You come in first thing Monday morning."
According to the report, nearly 36% of grandfathers claim that they found employment by entering a local business with nothing but a nickel in their pockets and a shirt on their backs. 24% saw a fine-looking marquee for a business and said, "Someday my name's going to be on that sign." And 40% of grandfathers said they waited all day in the company's waiting room, snuck into the CEO's office the first chance they got, and said, "Mr. McKinley, sir, I'm your guy."
It just took gumption. You didn't need some fancy internship looking the boss dead in the eye and showing him you were a man. That was your internship.
It's going to be fun. I don't know what happens, okay?
Good morning, you too.
Morning.
Got your results back. And I'm sorry, but the test was positive. You're a basic bitch.
Doctor, there has to be a mistake.
Well, unfortunately, no. Your symptoms are completely in line with other basic bitches. You're into scented candles, you order your bagels scooped, and then you own a picture frame that says family on it.
It's my fault she's a basic bitch. I gave you that friend's box set for Christmas.
Actually, she's been basic for quite some time now. Lucy, do you have any idea when maybe you first came in contact with all this basic shit?
I guess, in college, I owned a pair of sweatpants that said sexy on the butt.
Probably contracted your basic bitchness from a sorority sister. Borrow some Ugg boots here and there. Experiment with North Face.
Yeah.
Yeah. You basic.
I can't believe we ignored the signs. All the Zoom book classes, the inspirational quote in my email signature.
Paninis from Panera Bread?
Yeah, it's getting worse. Here you are at a Halloween party 4 years ago, dressed as a slutty nurse. That's some unoriginal ratchet shit right there. But at least you knew how to have fun. 2 years later, you're tweeting about Starbucks. Hashtag caffeine. Where did you come up with that? And finally, we caught this during an Instagram check this morning. That's a foot tattoo of your astrological sign.
I don't mean to be so sensitive. It's a Pisces thing.
If not treated properly, this could escalate to full-blown Sex in the City themed brunches.
Doctor, is it possible that I could contract her basicness?
Gerald!
What? I have a bad bitch reputation to uphold.
You should be fine, as long as you use protection. If she's watching Teen Mom or Say Yes to the Dress, I'd recommend that you distract yourself. Open a book, browse the internet, anything to prevent you from taking in that basic ash.
Is there any possibility of a full recovery? Could I ever, someday, be a bad bitch?
The best I can do is prescribe something that will help minimize your basic bitch symptoms. You'll never be a bad bitch. But with the proper treatment, you won't be so basic that you're posting pictures of you and your girls in Vegas with the caption, "What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas." We know what happened in Vegas. You got drunk and you danced with each other. I'm sorry. I'll give you 2 minutes.
Hey, we are stronger than this, okay? I am with you 100%.
You are so sweet. I feel like I'm in love, actually.
I want to divorce you.
I have to climb to find my peace of mind. I keep on leaving pieces of me behind, keeping me blinded, binded by night, forged by light, to sharpen my tongue to the blade of a knife. Take light, breathe, flames to the mic, veins for the light, we slain for the fight, to the love of the music, struggle nightly, decline trouble politely, cause although enticing, Ivy likes to strike, invite the strife, igniting white lies, cover up alibis, none of it or nothing is something I grown accustomed to trying. I'm cutting to the front of the line with something different than the other 100,000. I'm trying to make a difference. This is reminiscent of only dominion, no one bringing it harder in my opinion, in this rotten stone spinning. Copper tone, children don't get it, can't be plastic and feel shit, that's real, that's ridiculous, can't waste my time, I feel to never know another night like this, I pray to never lead another life like this, where will I be when I finally find my wish, saved and free to heaven on a timeless win, I say goodbye.
In my arms like a memory, nothing like the truth when you solve out the mystery, even in the moment,
your voice, watch me elevate, reach the higher heights, architect, I will recreate,
we have to let go.
The rain falls from my gutter. Another one of those lonely nights to hold each other. I didn't ask for you to stay. I just wanted to wear your face for half the day. To deal with any trouble coming my way, I'll leave the blame on somebody else by changing my name. Forgetting the pain that I left buried, half slain, half sane, having fame. Thoughts of what a day's gone by, not high was I spaced off. I can't fly, I'm losing time again. Thank God you found me, pronouncing me dead, announcing me the heads I've seen 1,000 times before. Their faces I've read in electric sunset. My senses sick as I shuffle through sentences of someone else's dialect. Next to my own weariness, miss my conscience, my content so foul. My consciousness in and out. Through continents I prowl, after that myself and found how to take what's dealt. Threw my feelings on the shelf and turned to someone else.
I hope to never know another night like this. I pray to never lead another life like this. Where will I be when I finally find my wish? Sailing free to heaven on a timeless wind. I say goodbye.
In my arms like a memory, nothing like the truth when you solve out the mystery. Living in the moment,
your voice watch me elevate, reach the higher heights, architect, I will recreate.
We have to let go.
Participate.
Watch for where you're
dealing.
Yeah, right no more.
this is so perplexing. Wrestling with my thoughts, not to overlook the interesting. The lining of the nesting, the in-betweens, the infinite shades of green, the not seen by the average eye, practical application of different knots. Tied to climb ladders to the top, find that they're not too kind to your kind. The plot's not nice, it's sugar-coated and spiced up, right? That's why I'm up tight, up late night, no time for sleep to sleep. I barely find the time to eat when I have the money to. Something you might not understand why I would sacrifice my life for this mic in my hand. It's my sanity, man. I couldn't handle it, I crap without my raps and my beats to match. Believe that. This is therapy helping me, energy moving throughout me. How we deal with our problems, we solve them through authoring novels. Reach nautical speed, profit through speech. No, I'd rather profit through the profit in me. I hope to never know another night like this. I pray to never lead another life like this. Where will I be when I finally find my wish? Sailing free to heaven on a timeless wind. I say goodbye.
My arms like a memory, nothing like the truth when you solve up the mystery. Watch me elevate, reach the higher heights, architect the world we create. We have to let go, we have to release the weight, come back home. From where we repatriate, wash away your fears. From then you can't participate, wash away your tears. Can't cry no more.
Investigators say a train operator in Chicago may have dozed off just moments before her train derailed, injuring 32 people. The public transit train jumped the tracks at O'Hare International Airport at around 3 a.m. local time. The front of the train ran up a nearby escalator.
Train is messed up. It's all the way up the escalator. It's messed up. No wheels, no nothing on the train. It's all messed up.
There is video from the station and from a camera on the train involved in the crash. Investigators hope that will help them figure out exactly what happened.
A bite to eat. He left the monkey sitting on the driver's seat. The monkey pulled the throttle, locomotive jumped the gun and did 90 miles an hour down the mainline run. The big locomotive right on time. The big locomotive coming down the line. The big locomotive number 99 left the engineer with a worried mind. The dispatcher on the phone and told him all about his locomotive was gone. He said, get on the Y-switch operator to ride, 'cause the monkey's got the main line sewn up tight. The switch operator got the message in time, said there's a northbound limit on the same main line. But open up the gate, we gotta let him through the hole, 'cause the monkey's got the locomotive under control. The big locomotive is right on time. The big locomotive coming down the line. The big locomotive number 99 left the engineer with a worried mind. Go! Right on time. The beat.
big locomotive coming down the line. The big locomotive number 99 left the engineer with a worried mind.
I mean, it's just so hard to believe that it's really all gone.
Jessica and Mark Talbot are struggling to pick up the pieces of their lives. It was in this living room 3 weeks ago that the Talbot family discovered their DVR had suddenly and inexplicably crashed, deleting more than 5 years' worth of recorded live events and miniseries.
I keep having flashbacks to that day, to that moment when I realized everything was gone. NCIS, ladies Olympic figure skating, all of my episodes of America's Test Kitchen.
You know, you hear stories about people who mismanage their device settings, but you never really think it could happen to you. Honestly, it feels like some sort of a dream. Like, when I wake up, I'll be able to just go downstairs, turn on the TV, and all the episodes of The Mentalist will be there again, as if nothing had ever happened.
The Talbots bought their DVR when they moved into their home 5 years ago, saying it had been their dream to have their own digital recording device. Over the years, the family recorded dozens of series from a variety of networks, including a number of painstakingly saved HD movies, which the couple say they had hoped to watch with their son someday.
One day we had everything. Every TV show you can think of. And then the next, my dad was saying that all those shows I grew up with, saved on the DVR, aren't there.
Friends and family of the Talbots have pledged their support, organizing DVD donations and offering passwords to online streaming services while the family struggles to move on.
We know that we'll never be able to replace all the hours of programming that we had, but I think in the end we'll be just fine. As long as we have our 5 seasons of Seinfeld on DVD.
A little girl sits on her own, sucking her thumb in the middle of a busy shopping center, looking scared and alone. So would you stop to see if she's okay? Well, more than 600 people didn't. As part of a TV experiment, two little girls were left alone on a London street to test the public's reaction to lost children. In the space of an hour, only one person stopped to see if the child needed help, while 616 walked on by. 7-year-old Uma was taken to Victoria Place shopping centre next to Victoria Station and left on her own, but with tight security around her.
Right, I've got a whole cluster of people.
So hard to watch people just walk by and ignore her.
Her 5-year-old sister, Maya, also takes part in the experiment, and at one stage a couple find her in their path and simply walk either side without stopping. Their mother, who watched from a short distance away, says it was shocking and heartbreaking to watch so many people ignore her children when they were clearly alone and vulnerable. The experiment has highlighted the fact that many people now feel too scared of other people's perceptions to stop to help a young person. But the NSPCC says an adult's responsibility to protect a child should supersede these concerns.
Holding racy Afronism dime, Billy Club, your color blind, refusing to join forces with your indie sud wonder kind. I'd rather embrace what your city summer undermines and encourage the idiot yum up and grind, sickly grub up and button minds. I prime my condom shelter, x-rated lithium, honey wine, and for your frowning when trying to arbitrators present my torture, door adorn, a gag, no soul, and more reform. You get the same if you're poor and form it with your flip-flop tuck, a triple left into this icy brook. World is sworn on my forlorn psyche.
I've got people to disappoint, I got mistakes to make. How can you believe that I'm not a waste of space? So I'm sorry to disappoint, I seldom say phrase. But how can I speak your language when I don't know my own? I got people to disappoint, I got mistakes to make. Your eroded innards is my favorite place. So I'm sorry to disappoint, I seldom say phrase. How can I speak your language? How can I speak your language?
There's no pleasure to ever treat her well. We turned into black Hebra elves, opposite elephants, all seesaws, android men. Boy, befriend the Sheik, come on to Tinkerbell, then runs away from home until my knees drop. Sneakers smelt on my every time read activates G odd sleeper cells, a flag whippers say please God, we need your help. Still, I've been curious and flat-footed, like your arrogant Donegan Joe. I'll holler at your Evelyn Monroe with declarative mumbo-jo. jumbo. Mind never the unfolds to a house of narcissism, parodied by bumhole. I cling to pointless ventures and in vain point. Best verb, I suck.
I got people to disappoint. I got mistakes to make. How can you believe that I'm not a waste of space? Well, I'm sorry to disappoint. I seldom save face, but how can I speak your language when I don't know my own? I got people to disappoint. I got mistakes to make. Your eroded innards is my favorite place. Well, I'm sorry to disappoint. I seldom save face. How can I speak your language? How can I speak your language?
This thought every once in a while. You know the one I'm talking about. Yeah. No! No! Not that one. Jesus! What the fuck's the matter with you? That's... I'm trying to have a friendly conversation. Fuck, man. That's... I'm never gonna get that picture out of my head. Many of us have that thought just for a second. What if I lived off the grid? Right? What if I lived on like a sustainable farm, growing my own food, gathering my own water, getting my energy directly from the sun? Well, now we have an answer to that question. You would be a f***ing no good, dirty criminal, alright? You'd be an anti-American scoundrel sucking off the system like a flopper off a witch's dick. A few months ago, Texas sent heavily armed SWAT teams into a sustainable community called, wait for it, the Garden of Eden, and handcuffed everyone at gunpoint. Now that might sound like a bit of an overreaction, but let's keep in mind.
To me, ultimately, the Garden of Eden is a state of consciousness, it's a state of mind.
That his beard makes us all uncomfortable, all right? We can't just have people with facial hair like that growing their own food. Before you know it, you'll have a guy with a handlebar mustache doing your laundry, all right? And Zach Galifianakis is licking your ears. It's a slippery slope. It really is. You think, oh, maybe I'll put in a few solar panels. And then before you know it, you look like the front man for Soundgarden. The SWAT team ultimately found no illegal drugs or weapons, but they proved their point. Do not try to grow your own rosemary in my jurisdiction, all right? We have no time for homegrown thyme. That was an herb pun. That's right. But this type of thing is happening elsewhere, too, like in Florida, where authorities have informed another woman recently that it's illegal for her not to be hooked into the electrical grid. There are two reasons state governments are trying to make sure sustainable living is illegal. One is because we can't just have people unhooked from their corporate chains, all right? Once you're allowed out of your corporate jail, you may start doing other things, like thinking for yourself, or questioning the ruling elite, or braiding your beard. But there's a bigger reason these sustainable, self-sufficient communities are under attack. They're a good example. A good example of how to change can be powerful. It can ignite fires and change minds. And America has always fought hard against good examples. Whether it be continuing to have sanctions against a country like Cuba, who threw off their U.S. shackles 55 years ago and we still haven't gotten over it. Or beating and arresting people at Occupy, who were not just protesting the insane level of inequality, but were also giving away free clothing and food for anyone who needed it. Good examples are as bad for business as dyslexia is for a tattoo artist, or as a tattoo artist is for a debutante ball. But it's just 12 little hippies baking up some homemade yams. What's the big deal? But 12 hippies with a yam is the most dangerous situation of all. And it's also the name of my favorite pop-up book. It's the most dangerous because, as Noam Chomsky once said when referring to America dealing with the threat of good examples, he said, quote, "The weaker and poorer a country is, the more dangerous it is as an example. If a tiny poor country like Grenada can succeed in bringing about a better life for its people, some other place that has much more money and resources will ask, why not us?" And this goes for tiny, off-the-grid communities, too. If the state allows a few people to live a happy life, away from corporations, away from slaving in an office job, away from student loan debts, away from money and advertiser influence, if they're allowed to simply enjoy their days working on art, exploration, and love, then every other douchebag out there is going to start thinking, why not me? Why can't I live like that? Why do I have to be the one that buys the Snuggies and the Huggies? Why do I have to dump all my time and money into high heels, Ferris wheels, and Kraft microwavable pre-processed anytime meals? Huh? I'm totally down to go live like those hippie guys, assuming they let me skip the tapeworm goatee part.
We're asking for, we've been asking for indigenous forgiveness, indigenous forgiveness, indigenous forgiveness. Oh, my hand is exposed and I'm gloving it. The universe is insane and I'm loving it. I come from a world wrapped in plastic, but an opposite girl thinks it's fantastic. Gift wrapping, face slapping tactics are bringing a rise to all kinds of different addicts. Freestyling in the bank, line awaiting. A shiny floor, shoes, shirt, and pants unstained. And I'm picking at my brain where I've been staying. But I left the valley, now I'm debating. Unscrew the waterfall, tap cap of your bottle. Half sip, a gush, shoe, push and full throttle. I seal the freshness that nonetheless will last longer. Content, skipped in content, is your contentment now stronger? Is your contentment now stronger that you skip the back-breaking beautiful hike to the source? He alive is indigenous forgiveness. Dripping full force, dripping full force. Can I drink it?
Yes, you can!
Questioning the things I'm ingesting and about eating these. It depends on who I'm asking. Can I eat it?
Yes, you can!
Indigenous forgiveness. Indigenous forgiveness. Indigenous forgiveness. Indigenous forgiveness. Indigenous forgiveness. Oh, my hand is exposed and I'm gloving it. The universe unfolds and I'm loving it. Microwaved avocados wrapped in plastic. I'm not bitching, but I think it's problematic. Uplifting, but pinching fanatics are bringing a rise to all kinds of different addicts. So make the money and pay the rent, or work the iron and pitch a tan. They throw you a bone and you will fail.
fetch it. Throw all the tantrums that you want, but I won't catch it. I'm unwrapping my heart from a box of matches. I'm striking it, I'm lighting it after I sew up the patches. And know it's gonna burn, but I'm giving it light. Cause I've been up on my tippy toes, not adding much height. And I'd skip the dark, trail to the sword. I had skipped the dark, trail to the source. Pele's indigenous forgiveness. Flowing full force, flowing full force. Can I live it?
Yes, you can.
Questioning the things I've been thinking. And about believing these things they've been masking. Oh, I guess it depends on who I'm masking. Can I trust it? Indigenous forgiveness, indigenous forgiveness, indigenous forgiveness, indigenous forgiveness, indigenous forgiveness. Oh,
indigenous forgive us.
Indigenous forgiveness, ask, do not demand. Can I have it? Yes, you can.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
Well, I'm definitely not brilliant, but what I am is curious, and I have a lot of free time.
Sure.
And so I just keep thinking about it because I have the ability to do so. Mm-hmm. I don't know if people were like born to do anything in life. I don't know if anybody was born to do anything in life. But I think for sure, if you follow your passion, you feel like you were born to do this. For sure, if you actually do what you enjoy out of life. And there was some really weak-ass article that somebody posted the other day that I'm sick and tired of rich people saying to follow your passion. It was hilariously stupid. Whatever dumbass wrote it, he actually had to change the title the next day because of a barrage of hate that he got from it. But it was about Richard Branson and a bunch of people saying, follow your passion. And he was saying essentially that most people shouldn't follow their passion. And in fact, they should
Did
keep
really
their passion as a hobby. Yeah. You know why? Because he's a weak bitch. He's a weak bitch, and he's worried that he possibly wasted his life writing shitty articles like this. And in fact, he did. And he was also talking about how, you know, fortunate he is personally to do what he does. But all these self-deprecating throws to poverty in it and all this nonsense in it. Essentially what he's doing was he was writing a thing that was downplaying greatness and inspiration. And when someone says follow your passion, you know, if anybody that says don't do that is an idiot. Because here's the thing. If you love making guitars, okay, and you just love guitars, you love making guitars, and you say, God, I would love to make guitars for a living. Someone does that, okay? There's a guy out there, and he gets up every morning, and he makes fucking guitars. And if that's what he loves to do, that guy loves life. We're not talking about breathing underwater, face. We're not talking about flying to the moon with a fucking rubber band. We're talking about making guitars. If your passion is making guitars, and you read that asshole's article where it says, don't follow your passion, fuck you, stupid. Fuck you, you weak dummy, you fucking disease of ideas. You're a disease idea. That's what you are. You're a rotten little weak man with poor hormones. And you can't figure out that your passion doesn't necessarily mean rich. Like, I'm so tired of rich people saying, follow your passion. Shut the fuck up. What difference does it make if they're rich? Everyone should say, follow your passion. That's how buildings got made. That's why airplanes were invented. That's why you could watch television, because someone followed their passion. What happens when you read Lord of the Rings? You're reading someone's passion. You're wearing clothes. You're wearing passion. You're listening to music. You're listening to passion. I'm reading your stupid fucking article. Your lack of passion is your passion. Your lack of following your passion is what you're so passionate about portraying.
Now, go find the others. .com.
Don't blow it. Keep it simple. Count your money.